I wouldn't trade being a mom for the world, but it's also a full-time job. And that means sometimes I get less sleep than I'd like. So I make the most of the hours of sleep I do get with Cozy Earth's luxurious bedding products. Cozy Earth bedding products are crafted with temperature-regulating technology that adapts to your body's needs through all phases of motherhood. And they use only the very best fabrics, materials, and weaves, offering superior softness that invites you to sink into a world of comfort. I have the king sheets for my bed, the entire set, and I swear to you, it's like you can't wait to get in and you never want to get out. If you're a commitment phobe, that's totally fine because Cozy Earth stands by the quality and longevity of their products, so much so that you can enjoy a 100-night sleep trial and a 10-year warranty on all purchases. And just for our listeners, Cozy Earth has an exclusive Mother's Day offer. Use the code Jillian for 35% off at CozyEarth.com. That's CozyEarth.com. Cozy Earth, built to last through the hardest days and the longest nights of motherhood.
When you need to refuel between meetings or running errands, or you just want a healthy snack that squashes your hunger, Wonderful Pistachios, which come in a variety of flavors and sizes, by the way, are the perfect choice to fill you up and keep you going throughout the day. Wonderful Pistachios is also a good source of protein and a zero guilt snack. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, guys, which gives you over 10% of your daily value. And with flavors like salt and pepper, sweet chili, and seasoned salt in the shelled variety, options like chili roasted, sea salt, and vinegar or jalapeno lime in the no shell variety, you're sure to please your taste buds while snacking healthy. So check out wonderfulpistachios.com to learn more about how these little green wonders can power up your day.
Look at you. You're just buzzing today.
Yes, I went for a swim this morning. It always makes me feel fresh as a little butterfly. Because I swim. I can swim. I can't do a lot of things, but I can certainly swim.
Fresh as a butterfly?
Well,
are butterflies fresh?
Yes, they are, because they only live for a day.
That's not true. Monarchs make a friggin', what's that called? A migration from, like, Hawaii to somewhere, like Canada or something.
Well, how come?
Live for a day.
Well, some of them live for
right
a day,
now.
Don't they? I've always
what
thought
planet
that.
Are you
and then
on?
I always thought, every time I see a butterfly and I go, man, they're getting as much as they can out of this day because they'll be dead tonight.
Brittany, will you Google that, please? No.
I totally thought that butterflies only live for a day.
No.
But then there, I know the migration. They come up to Canada
yeah,
somewhere.
What are you talking about right now? So wait a minute. You feel as fresh as a creature that's going to die imminently?
Well,
you are an odd.
They are enjoying life. When I look at a butterfly, they're just out there. Oh, look at, there's something else. And they go over there and they enjoy that. And then they go over here and they're just so damn happy.
That's my toddler, actually.
Yeah, see?
Maybe you're fresh as a toddler.
She's like a butterfly.
She's like, dude, I mean, just, it's amazing. The happiness and the silliest things.
Yeah.
And she can watch the same thing 1,000 times and just
be
love
happy.
It just as much as the first time.
See, I love that.
That's true. You're not wrong. You're not wrong. Fresh as a
butterfly.
Let me know when you find out that answer about the butterfly thing. Is it true that butterflies live for one day? I know some species live much, much longer than that. You must be thinking of mayflies. Well, a mayfly, I think, is a maggot. So you're a maggot.
Where did you get that from? A maggot. A mayfly.
I think a mayfly is a maggot.
The lifespan of a monarch butterfly varies between 2 to 7 months.
2 to 7 months. You jackass.
The most out of their 2 to 7
well,
months.
Still, though, that's, you know.
I'm fresh as a butterfly. You are as fresh as a maggot.
You know.
I'm just saying.
You know, I don't know what you had planned for this, but I think this is a perfect segue to talk about being dead.
Oh, yours being dead? Okay, go ahead.
Well, I just felt a change, but I think it might be because you're pulling on my cord.
I keep grabbing my headphone cord.
My keeps going calm.
It's your headphone cord.
No, it's just I was gonna bring this up. But I'll bring it up now because of the Living for a Day.
Yeah,
but you know,
like a maggot.
Have you
weirdo?
Have you not to be morbid, but have you had the conversation about what you want? When you're, if something was to happen to you.
El Dedo.
Have you had that conversation?
Yeah. Hasn't everyone?
No.
Oh my God, of course I have.
Well, I found this article that 80% of people, let me just quote this.
Oh.
80% of people do not have a written plan about what life prolonging treatments they would accept or reject at the end of life. And fewer than half have discussed the issue with their families.
Is it just that issue of, like, do not resuscitate, or is it also, like, life insurance and will and...
I think they're more for the need to plan for end of life. Like, do you want to be artificially ventilated, unable to swallow? Do you want, or, you know, are you going to have a tube in, or do you want to be turned, or DNRs?
I kind of thought, well, I mean, gosh. Look, here's... The minute you have kids, you're sort of in a... position where you have to kind of definitely say, look, here's my living trust and will and all that stuff, and so yeah, that I've had for a while. And then of course, if you have any stuff to leave behind, you have to kind of get that in order. So I've had that in order. But God, how I want to, you know, I've always said I don't want to be in the ground, I want to be cremated, so I've been pretty clear about that as well. And Heidi and I have had to give each other, like, the right to make these decisions, because you can't legally get married. So, like, I've had to spend a fortune creating those rights on paper, because if we were legally married, then she could say, no, she doesn't want to be resuscitated, but because you can't, I had to give her all this stuff. Anyway, but yeah. I always thought that you just kind of tell your, God, I haven't, like, written something up. Maybe I have, saying do not resuscitate, but I've been pretty clear, like...
Because if you don't, let somebody know who has the power to say, oh, you know, she didn't want a feeding tube in, the system takes over and the system will make the decisions for you.
Is that true?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah, because their job is to keep your life going. That's like, if you don't,
really?
Like for my mom, I had to sign
a
thing that said...
I would have thought it would have been the opposite.
No, because legally you have to keep, like, I had to sign a DNR for my mom so that they don't... if we were to have the paramedics come in, because believe it or not, you know, when you do CPR on somebody, I don't think people realize just how
violent it is.
And you crack ribs and so you got to say, you know what? Yes. I want her to be comfortable, but we will not have, you know, she had to sign that paper saying, I do not want that to happen to me. You know, I mean, that's an older person, but
I think people don't like to think about it. I mean,
Jillian, they don't, and they think by not talking about it, it'll just go away.
It's like not going to the doctor for your checkup. If you don't get checked up, then you're not really sick. When in essence, what ends up happening is you never catch it in time, and you've got much bigger problems.
And we don't think we're gonna, you know, death is the one thing that is really gonna happen to all of us.
I always feel like it could at any given second I could die. I feel like that all the time.
Oh, really?
I don't fear it, though, because I heard this great quote, and it's like, fearing death is fearing life. So if you're afraid every single day, like, oh, I could die today, or this could make me die, or I could die here, then you never truly live. But I am always, always painfully aware that this could be it. This could be the last day. Always, just because I've seen it so much.
Yeah.
But I've never thought, like, I've been pretty good about it. The truth of the matter is, I've been pretty good about it. I've expressed that, you know, I want to be cremated. I want to be cremated in a cardboard box. Like, I've been pretty specific.
Okay, but what about if you're not dead?
I've told people. I don't know if we put it in my whole legalese, but I would think maybe we did, because my lawyer really, I had to create all this stuff so that Heidi had to do it. So, like, when we went into the hospital with Phoenix, God forbid anything happened, that, you know, I hadn't been able to legally adopt him yet and it wasn't born. So, like, she had to leave all this stuff saying that I was in charge and of her and this and that. And, Yeah, we've pretty much done that.
Okay. See, I did. I made my sister the decision maker. Like it's like a it's like a living will. So she's the one that could say if I am in a car accident and I'm being kept alive by a pump. Ooh. She's the one that can legally, but I had to put it in my will. Like it had to be a legal form giving her the, you know,
that's really smart. I think you're right. I think that's something that, that we should really get in line. It's the great equalizer, death though. That's the one thing.
How do you mean?
Well, my shrink once said this to me, he's like, this is the end we all meet. Like, we're all, this is going to happen. It's the one thing that we all experience, we all go through, that no one can escape, that we're all equal in this world. So whether it's now or whether it's later, it's something that we're all, I never think it's something that isn't going to happen to me. Never. Do you really think?
Oh, no. I think it's going to happen to me, but I just want to be.
The youngins. Jake, Brittany, do you feel that way? Like you're not going to die?
No. Sometimes.
You're like me.
Uh-huh. Sometimes.
Of course you are, because you're a boy.
You don't think about it. And then you do things, and then people say, oh, you could have died. Or
yeah, boy. That's why they send them into wars, because they don't think like that. Really. They take these 18-year-old kids who think they're invincible and send them to friggin' Vietnam and stuff like that.
But as for Jake and Brittany, though, too, you're also at an age, because you're young. Well, you two. Well, I don't know, Jake.
I'm not young. I'm 38.
No, but... like, I still sometimes think, oh, my mom and dad will make the decision for me. I'm 53, and sometimes that goes to, and my mom has passed away, but you never grow up. Like, you always think, oh, my mom and dad, they'll make that decision. And so when you, to actually have to go, oh, I got to make this decision.
That's interesting. I think that's more your upbringing, because, like, I realize that I've always been the sort of, God, I don't want this to sound wrong, but like when you think of the traditional role of the man, like the one that handles things or say, I'm the man, let me get all the affairs in order, let me be the breadwinner. I grew up in that role because I always felt like I was protecting my mom from my dad, even though I wasn't and my mom was perfectly capable of protecting herself. I always felt like he was such a bad guy and that I was my, right, I took it on and I continue to take it on. So I've always felt like, no, I'll handle it. And I always... like with my mom, even now, I'm like, Mom, I'll fix it for you. She's like, I'm fine. I'm an adult. I can handle it myself. Right. But no, I don't know. It's something, for whatever morbid reason, it's something that I have dealt with. But you know what? You make a really good point. And I think for everyone out there who hasn't thought about it, who doesn't want to think about it, and it is awful. Like I remember having to run through scenarios with my lawyer and he's like, what if you die? Where does the money go? What if you and Heidi die? Where does the money go? What if you, the kids, and Heidi die? Where does the money go? And I was like, David, really? Like, I was exhausted. I'll never forget it. It was like hours long in a room of like getting all this minutia down, which, again, not everyone has to go through all that, but it was depressing and exhausting, and I hated it. But I was relieved when it was done. And I just think that you're right. You can't... it's not something you can take for granted. It's not something you can put off. And it's something that, and I even have life insurance policies, the whole thing. Yeah. That was a weird one. I hated the life insurance policy. That was a tough one for me because I felt like it was really making it real. Like, okay, you're dead. How is your family going to get along without you? And then someone now has an incentive to kill you because they get millions of dollars. But yeah, no, dude, you really, you're right. It's something that we need to think about and we need to step up and be mature and responsible and take,
especially if you don't want your life prolonged. That's a long ass death, you know, and you see it in, you know, not just accident victims, but you see it in the elderly, and you see this life being prolonged and prolonged and prolonged because that legally they have to continue to prolong that life.
It's so wild. With animals, it's the exact opposite.
Exactly.
The exact opposite. It's like, look, this dog's not going to make it, and the dog's in pain. You have a decision to make.
Which is, and that's when we, you know, and I've heard it so many times by animal lovers that you know, we do have to, in a certain way, not we're playing God. I don't believe that we're playing God.
I don't think we're playing God, because the dog's going to die. That's why you're doing it. But
right.
I remember having to put a dog down, a rescue dog. Did you know that? This rescue dog, like within the last year, it was the worst.
No.
I had found this dog on the streets, and he had kidney failure, and I had to put him down, and even though I knew he was dying, we had him for 4 months, and I was just like, okay, it's like hospice, and we were kind of going through the motions. But when we had to put him down, it tweaked my brain so badly. I was like, what if I robbed him of a day? What if I robbed him of two days? I hated it. It was awful.
Which is the ethical, is the ethical fight we have about people, people, and, you know, with people with Parkinson's or Lou Gehrig's, you know, what if they have another day? What if they, you know, and we do that.
I know.
So that's where.
Yeah, but you're right. That's why you should get your stuff in order and take that pressure off your family and let people know what you want.
Yeah. Just have the conversation with somebody. For sure.
Well, now that we've talked about dying, maybe we should talk
about
living better.
Well, you told me that I'm a maggot. You told me that I'm a maggot.
I didn't say you're a maggot. You said you're a maggot.
No, you said I was a
maggot. You said I'm that creature that lives for a day. Well, it's a mayfly, which is like this disgusting little thing that comes
from. I'm going to look that. When I get finished our work for the day, I'm going to spend some time on the Google.
I just Googled it for you.
I know, but Brittany never looked up maggot.
Maggot, mayfly. That's a disgusting little creature. It's a little.
What's so disgusting about it? It's not
a maggot.
It comes
from a maggot.
Oh, sure, you're just making that. You know, she's lying. Look,
no,
at her.
What do you think?
You and Brittany are having Google
what
eyes.
What do you think for a second?
I don't think.
What do you think? You think it doesn't come from a maggot? What do you think a maggot is? Yeah, you're a maggot.
Oh, you know what?
Anyway.
Well, the maggot and Jillian need to take a break. And we'll be right back with a little more uplifting conversation.
Oh, good. All right. So a little while ago, we did a segment about what it would be like to live in cliches.
Right.
What would happen if you actually did follow cliche advice? It turns out, seemingly, like your life would actually be kind of great. So we're going to challenge you to try this again. And we want you to take it one cliche at a time. So either for the day or even a week, practice one of these at a time and make it your mantra. All right. So the first one is about generosity, right? So here's the cliche. True generosity doesn't leave you with less, it leaves you with more. Janice is deep in thought. Seriously, though.
Yeah.
Have you ever, now again, I want to clarify, this is not about spreading yourself too thin or, you know, putting yourself out in ways that you can't afford with regard to your time or your finances. But if you can give back or help another person. First of all, when you help somebody or something, I say thing, animal, creature, whatever it might be, somebody or some creature, essentially even the planet, I personally feel that it makes me empowered, like not helpless, like I can have an impact, I can make a difference. In addition, you know, there's got to be that ebb and that flow, that currency of life. You've got to receive when you give and vice versa. But whenever I am in that headspace of giving what I can afford to spare, again, without spreading myself too thin, it really does kind of fill you up on an emotional level and having more meaning in your life. And it provides me with a sense of connectedness.
Mm-hmm.
Do you ever get that?
Yep, very much so. Very much so. Because it gets me out of self.
Yes. Yeah. And by the way, self is a lonely place to be. I think we all crave that kind of connection. I was talking about, again, here I go with my shrink and my kids, but I was talking about my son and I was saying, you know, he's 8 weeks old now. And I was just, I'm like, God, he doesn't need anything. The 2-year-old is like constant. And he was like, you're so wrong. And I was like, no, you know, I feed him, I burp him, I change him, and he's happy. And he said, no, at that age, they need to feel a sense of at one-ment with you.
Hmm.
They almost need to feel like they're in a merged state with you. And I thought, God, that's so interesting. They want, which is what he had, of course, in his mother's stomach, and what he needs now as this new little young creature. And we as individuals probably truly do all want that with one another, with the planet. But we've become so separate and life has become so hard and we perceive ourselves as being almost rogue and almost cherishing that. I'm a rugged individualist, but there's a true peace with that feeling of being at one with humanity, with the universe. And I think you'll find more of that when you are giving. So practice it for a day, for a week, and see what comes back to you. Okay, ready? Vulnerability brings trust. Trust brings true intimacy and opportunity. I hate being vulnerable. I think everyone hates being vulnerable. Is it me?
No, it's just...
You hate it. You get the, quote, efforts when you feel vulnerable.
Well, it's just, it's a little bit scary.
Right.
Because we open ourselves up to pain and sorrow.
However, though, when you're not vulnerable, you remain in pain and sorrow.
True. Very true.
Whereas when you can be vulnerable... And yes, you open yourself up to rejection. You're also opening yourself up to the possibility for true closeness and intimacy. When you can say to a loved one, I'm feeling this way. And if they can truly hear you and you can find resolution, that's going to bring you a lot closer together. If you can be vulnerable professionally and take risks and take chances, that could help you facilitate your dreams. Make your dreams come true because you went out on a limb. You took a risk. You made yourself vulnerable and you risked rejection and loss. Mm-hmm. So yes, sure, there are going to be times where you fail and you fall down and it sucks, but you're not going to die. And the end result, the positive possibility, could end up making all your dreams come true and you'll know that much more opportunity and intimacy. So that's the next one. I want you to practice being vulnerable, communicating your feelings. And again, remember, how you're vulnerable is going to have a big impact on the outcome. So... If you attack somebody when you tell them how you feel, they're probably not going to hear you and things are going to go wrong.
True.
But if you say, you know, when you guys went out and you didn't invite me, I just, my feelings were hurt. I felt a little left out. Instead of, you guys never think of me. You're inconsiderate jerks. You didn't invite me out because you're selfish a-holes. Well, yeah, that's going to shut somebody down. Think about how you're approaching your vulnerability, how you're handling the vulnerability. In a calm, rational, informed fashion, and you'll most likely get the results you desire. Okay, now, flexibility isn't wishy-washy. There's a difference between knowing your priorities and not knowing your own mind. Does that make sense? So I think a lot of people live in a place of black and white.
True.
And I think we feel we have to live in that place because it provides us with security. Have you ever noticed, like, people that adhere to a certain religion or adhere to certain, you know, this is the way life is. That's the way that there's no room for anything else. This is life is black and life is white and this is like this and this is like that. And I've learned in my wee little 38 years that life is always... It's always gray. And again, this is something that we approach a lot. But flexibility to me is not about being wishy-washy or picking a stand. It's about keeping an open mind to the possibilities and saying, okay, if you keep an open mind, you're always able to experience the world in a new way and learn something new. But it doesn't mean that you might still end up believing what you believe. But I think that a lot of people come into the world or approach the world with a very black or white, these are the rules, these are the rules I live by, and that it helps ground them. But you know what it does? It does just that. It literally grounds you. Mm-hmm. And it keeps you from flying and seeing the world in new ways and having an open mind. I'm not asking you to be wrong or saying that someone else is right. I'm just asking you, keep an open mind. I remember I put something up on my Facebook once, and I said... you know, we're all brought into this world with our own unique purpose, and don't be afraid to create your own meaning. You know, find your meaning, create your own meaning. The meaning of life is different for everybody. And it was really interesting because a lot of people wrote back and said, Jesus is the meaning of life. And I thought, well, okay, what if I'm Jewish? What if I'm a Buddhist? What if I'm a nihilist? What if I'm an atheist? You know, Jesus is your meaning of life, but for a host of millions of other people, he's not. It doesn't make you wrong, But it's just...
And it doesn't make you less spiritual.
Right! Exactly! To just keep an open mind and say, for them, he's not the meaning of their life. It doesn't make them wrong. It's just... And it allows you to be able to communicate with other people and connect to other people and connect to the world. You don't have to agree. You can just maybe open your mind a little bit and see their perspective and explore, and you still may, no, Jesus is it, and that's okay. He's it for you, and that's great. I'm just saying, keep an open mind. Be flexible. And a lot of solutions in your life, professionally, personally, are not, I don't like the word compromise, but I do like the word flexibility. Mm-hmm. You know, even in the way I try to deal with my daughter, it's like, okay. How can I be flexible with these methods? You know, I'm not going to Ferberize her and I'm not going to attachment parent her. But where's the open mind? Where's the flexibility in saying, I like a little bit of this. I like a little bit of that. This didn't work. Let me try that. Let me manipulate this theory. And I don't know. Flexibility. That's it. There. Try those things. Live in those cliches for...
I have one more.
Oh. Uh-oh.
I keep it in my book.
What book?
This book.
Okay.
My show book.
Ah.
We forfeit 3/4 of ourselves in order to be like other people.
Oh, I like Janice.
Arthur Schopenhauer. We forfeit 3/4 of ourselves in order to be like other people.
I like that.
Sometimes I compare myself a lot. You know, I think, oh, if I was just a little bit mean, I just think, that's not me.
Because you do everything wrong.
I do everything. I pretty well do everything wrong.
That's like the worst thing you can do. I'm so sorry. It's so bad. Like, one of the things they tell me with the kids is never, ever compare them to each other. Why don't you eat your blah, 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 like Lou? Or, you know, why don't you go on the potty? You want to be a baby like Phoenix? Like, you're never supposed to do that to your kids. You're never supposed to compare them to other kids or to each other. And look what you do to yourself. See, you should never, ever treat yourself the way you treat your kids. That's the rule. You shouldn't ever... treat yourself in a way you wouldn't treat your kids. Would you ever compare your children to, like, why don't you do it like Billy? Why don't you do it like, no, you're not supposed to do that. You're not supposed to do that to yourself.
Yeah, comparing is tough. It's a tough one.
I like your little doohickey.
It's my thing.
Unless, of course, you're way ahead of the competition, then compare away. What?
No, that's
honesty never killed anyone. Well, maybe my career, but other than that. Jeez. All right, that's it. Okay. Well, this is how it starts. 2 lovers in the dark on the run from the one that they call share sparks. 6 guns by the side and bullets round their waist. 2 shots to the sky, signal sign for the chase. The safe was nearly empty and they were nearly free, but was seen by the good eye of the mean Billy Green. And he screamed at the top of his lungs, they're on the run. It's the 2 outsiders, grab your horses and your guns. I said I wish that we could stay here, but I fear our time has come. But we could ride out in the darkness. All right, you ready?
Yeah.
Okay, so 8 reasons to avoid overly processed chemical foods. Are you ready? It's creepy, creepy, creepy. Okay. Number 1. Okay, deciphering food label ingredients leads to unappetizing results. So I had to write this one down, forgive me, because I can't pronounce it. So there's an ingredient called castoreum, which is used to enhance the flavor in like puddings or candies or some kind of frozen dairy desserts. Well, you see something like castoreum and you're probably like, oh, that doesn't sound like one of the main offenders. Well, it's derived from beaver glands. Isn't that disgusting?
What gland?
I swear to God, it's from their anal gland. I swear on my life, beaver anal glands specifically. Castoreum.
I gotta write that down.
Castoreum.
These sandwiches are clean, right?
And what
I get you organic sandwiches. Hello.
What is it found in sweet things?
Castoreum. Like, you should find it in like a pudding or a candy or like frozen dairy desserts. Castoreum.
Oh, no.
It's derived from beaver anal glands.
Yeah.
Okay, you ready for this one? So like a fast food burger, you obviously have a much greater risk of E. coli contamination.
Right.
But the reason is because a fast food burger contains the trimmings of dozens of cows raised from around the globe. So it could be like, you know, the tendon from the cow in Japan to the tail from the cow in Ohio, all from factory farms. Yeah, and you know that factory farm conditions, they're like live in their own excrement, which is why food poisoning is so.
You mean feedlots?
Yeah, exactly. All right, now, here's a study that came out of UCLA, and it showed that it took only 2 months to lower the level of brain chemicals in the body responsible for learning and memory when a person's been on a steady diet of processed foods. 2 months.
Oh, really?
Yeah, well, you know something, though, when you look at things like flavor enhancers and MSG, they're a lot of times they're called excitotoxins, so this would make sense to me because they essentially excite the appetite center of the brain and cause the cells to die. But anyway, this is obviously might not be about that, but...
And what's it doing? Yeah. It's lowering your...
It lowers the level of brain chemicals in the body that are responsible for learning and memory. Like, there's a chemical called BDNF, and it's responsible for memory and learning. But a steady diet of processed foods
will
decrease that, and they noticed it in only 2 months.
Jesus.
Yeah, neat, huh? Okay, now, here's another one. Ew. Are you ready? Mm-hmm. The same company that makes metal detectors for airports also sells them to food manufacturers. Ask me why.
Why does the company that makes metal detectors for the airport sell them to food companies?
Because they test their processed meats for stray wires, metal shards, and hypodermic needles.
That the cow ate?
Girl, I don't know. Who knows? From the factory? Who the hell knows? Maybe.
Oh,
but it's processed meat, so I would imagine it's from the factory. How they're processing, like, bologna and things like that. Okay, how about this one? The ingredient list for a strawberry fruit roll-up doesn't actually include strawberries.
Okay, that actually doesn't surprise me. I don't know why that doesn't surprise
me, but
it doesn't.
Come on, dude. You realize it's all, like, chemicals. It's all chemicals. There's no strawberries in it. And, of course, who eats a strawberry fruit roll-up? A kid.
God, nothing. There's not a food product in it.
Not strawberry. There's no strawberries in the strawberry fruit roll-up. Nothing. All right. This one is as gross as it gets.
Okay, I'm prepared.
The animal feed given to factory-farmed cows contains rendered roadkill, euthanized cats and dogs, and plastic pellets as a form of cheap roughage.
Wait a minute. So
you're rocking. Janice is rocking, actually, in the corner.
Say that again.
Okay.
From the beginning.
Animal feed given to factory-farmed cows contains rendered roadkill and euthanized cats and dogs, as well as plastic pellets, as a cheap form of, quote, roughage.
Once again, the stuff they're giving in feedlots, right?
Yeah.
Hmm? Oh,
well, that's how cows were getting mad cow or eating other cows and things
right,
like that. Yeah.
Right, right.
Yep. Yeah, how about that? People are like, why does she always tell us to go organic? She's such an elitist.
Oh, I don't know. Why don't you eat, you know,
because
a dead skunk off the highway?
No, the one that still kills me is there's beaver anus in my ice cream. I want to know what whack job was out there going, you know what, to make this tastier? Let's go get some beaver anus. Which is a bizarre combination of words, too, if you think about it, in one sentence. Yeah. Oh, I just realized that might be why you guys are reacting.
God.
I'm just saying, how do they know that this will make the ice cream tastier?
I don't understand. Like, what?
I don't know.
How?
Because cat and dog anus didn't work first.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
I guess that's the answer.
Oh, my God. Woo, I got two more. I got two more. All right.
Sorry.
Are you ready?
Yes.
Okay, there are more than 80 ingredients in one of Oscar Mayer's Lunchables, the breaded chicken and the mozzarella sandwich. It has more than 80 ingredients in it.
Oh, God.
Which is bad, obviously,
because
it should be bread, chicken, and cheese. But that is not the case, apparently. And, of course, who eats Lunchables? Kids.
Yeah.
All right, last one. Oh, God. The FDA allows for 19 maggots and 74 mites in a 3.5-ounce can of mushrooms.
You know what? I saw something on that when they opened a can of mushrooms, and it was disgusting.
I don't know why we're laughing. I think we just don't feel we have an option.
Well,
wait, where was this can of mushrooms? Is my question.
Oh my God.
Yeah, and you know, how old is the shelf life? But I do know mushrooms are notorious for having buggies in them.
Oh man.
Like, canned mushrooms are kind of disgusting anyway.
The guy that basically wrote this article where I got this information, his name is Tyler Graham. And he wrote a book called The Happiness Diet, and he was also the health and environment editor at O Magazine. He's a nutrition editor at Prevention. I mean,
so the guy knows what he's
talking
about.
He launched a men's health section at Details Magazine. Like, this guy's for real, dude. This is real. Yeah,
oh,
this is
man.
Real. I know. I found it on Maria. You know, I love Maria Rodale.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and they have like men's health, women's health. You know, I think they have runners, all those things, and. Basically, he wrote a whole article on her website. So that's yeah, there you go.
Wow.
And I was shocking. Like, oh, this is a must share. I can't wait to share this with Janice. Yeah, there you go. Castorium. Beaver butt. Yeah. All right. Well. There you go. Ready for what now? Come up with something good.
Yeah. No, you know what? You know, we need to do some calls. We need to chat.
Fine.
We got people waiting.
Thank God.
Okay. And don't ruin their day and tell them that their ice cream has beaver ass. Get it. Don't ruin their day. Hi, it's Jillian. Just before we get started, did you know that your tasty treat? Beaver ass. I'm Jillian Michaels. Toot toot. We'll be right
Are we on? Okay, wait. I have to read this up because I looked it up because I didn't believe it. Castoreum. Definition. A bitter, strong-smelling, creamy, orange-brown substance that consists of the dried perineal glands of the beaver and their secretion and is usually used especially by perfumers and also called castor.
Is that castor oil?
I'm not sure. And then there's 16 comments under the definition. And one woman says, okay, who farms the beavers? And then the other one says, oh, and more interesting is who decided that it tasted good in the first place? Who licked the beaver's butt? Yeah. Yeah, there's a whole nother article called The 15 Grossest Things You're Eating. Number 8, Castoreum, Beaver Anal Gland Juice. There you go.
Oh, do they have to say the word juice at the end?
What do you want from me, dog?
Oh, God.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm just here to I'm here to inform. All right, I'm ready to talk to people.
All right, then let's talk to Tammy, who is waiting for you right now.
Awesome. Hey, Tammy, what's going on?
Hi. I work in a hospital and I work 12-hour shifts, and I have a group of people on a specific shift that I work that are like negative all the time. They're always talking about people. They're.
I lost you. I'm sorry, buddy. I lost you for a second. I heard you say they're negative and they're talking about people, and then I lost you.
Yeah, and then if they don't like you for some reason, or you like sometimes if you stand up to them, the backlash is almost worse than just trying to deal with them.
Okay.
And I'm not to the point where I just don't know what to do with these people. I've tried kind of ignoring them, trying to stay away from them, but they just like they'll follow you.
They follow you. All right, give me examples of what you mean by they follow you.
Well, I'll like try to leave the situation. Like if they're starting to talk about somebody, I'll just try to leave the situation.
Uh-huh.
They'll just like come up like behind me and keep talking to me about these people, and I tried to tell them, you know, I don't really want to hear it, and then you get backlash from that. And then it just goes round and round with these people.
You get back, what kind of backlash?
Well, they'll start talking about you. They'll go to the boss saying that you're not a team player with them because you're trying to stay away from them. And it's just, it's crazy.
Yeah, no, it does sound crazy. Okay. Honestly, you have two choices, and this is it. So I wish I could give you like a perfectly tailored answer that makes this situation instantly better for you, but the reality is you have to set hard boundaries with these people. And then if they talk about you, it can't really bother you. And you have to have a rapport with your boss where this person, he or she, trusts in the credibility of your work and your commitment and devotion to the job, period. And I think I might actually have an off-the-record conversation and just say, listen, I've been feeling like... Actually, no, I wouldn't. Do your job and stay under the radar. Express, just say, listen, you know what? I appreciate the conversation and the company, but I don't want to get involved in this aspect of the conversation. And then if it keeps going, walk away. Just say, just make a joke of it without judgment and just say, I will catch you later. I don't want to talk about it. I'll see you in a bit later. Bye-bye. Walk away. Try not to judge them, because to let them know you're feeling this way. Like, don't say, I told you this is mean and nasty, because then you're going to really incite the devil, because you're forcing them to look at themselves and they're not going to want to do that. So don't hold up a mirror. Just say, I don't want to get involved. I can't get involved in this. Just say, you know, I have enough going on in my own life. And then just like, I'll catch you later, or I got to go do this, or I got to go do that, or I'm going to get a cup of coffee, you want one, or something of that nature, and avoid. But make it very clear that it's a conversation you don't want to engage in. Redirect the conversation to something you want to talk about. Did you see that movie? Did you see that television show? What did you think of blah, blah, blah on TV last night? Redirect it, and we call it bridging. So like in publicity, let's say you are trying to talk about... your new weight loss DVD, but they say, oh, you know, we heard that you, I don't know, something about your family that you don't want to talk about. And it's like, you know, it's so funny you say that. As a new mom, it's been so hard to find the time to work out. And that's why fitness DVDs are such a godsend. It's one of the reasons I wanted to create XDVD, was so that busy moms can get a workout. You just bring it back. You bridge it to where you want to be. You just bring the conversation back to where you want it. So you do it gently, you know, and then if that doesn't work, you gently express that you don't want to get engaged. And then in a very fun and sweet way, you extricate yourself from the situation. If they then go to your boss and say, so-and-so is not a team player, that's when you get in a situation where you just say, listen, can you point out instances where you feel I haven't done my job? And, you know, I'm extremely committed to my job, but I just find that, you know, there are certain individuals in the office who get very wrapped up in the drama. And it's not good for me. It's not good for my energy. It's not good for my heart. It's not good for my head. And I don't want to engage. But if you have complaints with the way I do my job, I of course I want to hear them. Of course I want your feedback. And of course I'll improve in any way you see fit. But this seems to me more like office politics, and I just don't want to be involved.
Yeah, it's definitely office politics for sure. It's like a group. It's not, you know, it's like cliques, like in high school.
Yep, I know.
it's crazy. I'm trying to get away from these people. I've made some changes in my schedule that will hopefully take effect soon with somebody. But it's just, I mean, I worked yesterday with these people, and it batters your self-esteem just a little bit, because one of these people will be in charge sometimes. So if he's mad at you or whatever, he'll adjust the assignment so you're the person that gets dumped on. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
All right. You know, the only other option you have, buddy, is to actually, I mean, and I hate to see you chased out of this environment, and the job market is tough right now, but you might want to just simultaneously start looking for another opportunity while you have this job.
Yeah, I'm actually doing that.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, you manage it in the ways that I told you. You delicately bridge, you segue, you find excuses to walk away from the conversation, don't hold up a mirror, don't openly judge, because that will backfire. And if it comes down to it with a boss or a superior, you just say, can you point out instances where, you know, I feel committed, and can you point out instances where you can provide me feedback, or you feel I haven't been up to par? And I would be looking at the same time for another job where you don't feel so drained or unhappy.
Yeah.
It's just it doesn't sound like a healthy work environment. Those are management tips, but if it really truly bothers you, it's just look and see if there aren't other opportunities while you're managing the situation for the time being.
Yeah. I'm definitely working on that.
And boundaries, boundaries, boundaries. It's okay to set boundaries. Just practice your diplomacy and set your boundaries.
Okay.
I'm sorry, honey. I wish I had better advice.
It's a rough
Other than hiring a hitman, which really isn't going to get you very far, sounds like a prison environment might be more pleasant, though, at the end of the day than this place, but that's what you got to do.
Okay.
All right.
Hey, thanks a lot.
Bye, buddy.
Okay, bye.
See, that's how I feel about you guys. No, not you, Jake, and not you, Brittany, but Janice. It's like I'm just stuck with this toxic energy. You know, it's poisonous.
Well, you could fire me. You could say...
I could?
Oh. I think you can't you? Yeah, you could. You could say...
I don't think so.
She could fire me.
I could?
Yeah. Well, I shouldn't give you that idea.
I'm going to come in every day and be like this. Janice, I'll fire you from this one day of work.
Get me my rich people tea.
Yeah, exactly.
Get me my rich
Those
people
are real.
Tea.
Janice would be like this. Oh, shucks, I'm fired. What a bummer. Where went that 5 cents off my P&L balance sheet?
Oh, shucks, I'm fired.
Gee willikers. Oh, devastated.
I've been fired before.
Oh, join the club.
Isn't it amazing? You know what? And I don't know if this is Tammy's case. I mean, obviously there's a fear of losing the job, but you know, once you've been fired, it certainly takes the angst out of it because you just kind of go, I've been fired before. I don't know.
I haven't been fired in a really long time.
Because you've been your own boss.
I haven't been. That's right. I didn't think about that. Yeah, I haven't been fired in a really long time, but it's scary because you're like, oh my God, how am I going to pay my bills? But when it did happen, I remember thinking to myself, like, where's the opportunity here? Was I not happy doing this? Or, you know, is there another direction I should be moving in? Or was I, you know, you look for, I don't think, she's not going to get fired, though. She needs to decide whether or not she can tolerate that environment or whether she needs to quit. But you're fired.
Oh.
But after today, though, because we still have to finish the show.
We
got to
finish the show. All right.
Yeah.
I think we're finished with this particular show.
Then you're fired. Oh, that feels so good. You can turn around and just say, take that job and shove it. Remember that movie from like the 80s or whatever it was?
Oh, look at you going backwards to the olden days.
Yeah.
Take this job and who did that?
I don't remember. I just remember Brittany looked that up. Take this job and shove it. It was a big thing in the 80s.
Was that Fast Times at Ridgemont High where he quits the,
yes!
the fish shop?
Take this job and shove it. Judge Reinhold.
Oh, my God.
Oh, it's Sean Penn.
No, it wasn't Sean Penn. It was the other guy.
Yeah. Andrew McCarthy?
No, he wasn't in that movie. Oh. Mother of God. Jake wasn't even alive. And he knows better. Andrew McCarthy wasn't in Fast Times at Ridgemont High. He was in The Breakfast Club.
Oh, I don't know. All those 80s movies, they all blend together for me. 80s wasn't a good time for me.
Why?
I don't know. There was something about my hair. Because I went into the larger hair area in the 80s, and I think it affected my brain.
The larger? Can I get a picture of that?
Yeah, I think I have one.
I would love it. Were you using the Something About Mary hair product?
Oh, God.
No, that was before I was using gel. The Mary gel.
Was it Castoreum? Is that what you were using? Dear God. Yeah.
All right. That's what I was using.
Yeah.
Hey, look at the chick with the beaver ass hair. That's what they said throughout the 80s, the entire decade. That's... was my life. Aren't I fired? I gotta go. We gotta go. Let's stop before we get in trouble.
It's amazing. If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schlesinger, I've been friends with her for 10 years, one of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore. Because it's here. And it's funny. And I love you.
One, two, three, four. Those are numbers. But you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. They're really good at numbers. Auto Trader.